Good morning, counsel. This is the case of State X Rel Malone versus Baldonado Bellamy. And as you can see, six members of the court are here in person. Justice Miller Lerman is on WebEx.
Good morning. I beg your pardon. Good morning, Judge Miller Lerman here by WebEx. Thanks.
She will be. I'm sorry. Yes, we don't have six members here. We have five members because Judge Frydenberg is recused in this matter. Justice Miller Lerman will be participating just as if she were in the courtroom. Thank you very much for wearing masks when you are not presenting. When you are presenting, please take your mask off so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. And with that, does anybody have any questions before we begin? Thank you very much. We may proceed then. Mr. Supernaw, good morning to you, and you may approach and you may proceed.
May it please the court, Bradley Supernaw on behalf of appellant Kevin Malone. This is a pretty simple case, basically two issues of whether the audio files produced during a trial are public records as defined by the Nebraska Public Records Act, and whether an exception to the Public Records Act applies. This comes to the court after a trial on a mandamus. In order to prove the mandamus, the appellant needed to show that he was a citizen of Nebraska, that the records he requests are public records as defined by the act, and that he has been denied access to the public records.
On the latter point, if I may, what does the record show demonstrate that he was denied a request was in fact made and a request was in fact denied? Thank you.
Certainly. We have several letters written to both the official court reporter from the trial as well as to the clerk of the district court of Douglas County requesting the audio files.
But you'd concede that those letters weren't making a demand under the public records statutes?
The public records statutes doesn't say that it has to be cited in the request. It doesn't say that you have to say that it's a public record. Certainly the letters to Ms. Bellamy didn't cite the statute. However, the letter to Mr. Friend does cite the statute. So even if the letter to Ms. Bellamy was not considered a request, certainly the letter to Mr. Friend would be considered
a request. Is there a response by Mr. Friend?
Not by Mr. Friend. The Attorney General's office made a response. Also, the letter to Mr. Friend was in July of 2018. The trial in this case, the mandamus trial, didn't take place until a year later. So,
who was the custodian of the record?
According to the Supreme Court's rules, the clerk of the district court is the custodian of any records of the trial court, of the district court. So, Mr. Friend would be the custodian of the records.
He has them in his office, does he?
He does at this point. When the request was first made and when the mandamus complaint was filed, Ms. Bellamy still had them, even though she had resigned, I believe it's December of 2017.
So when the request was made to Mr. Friend, that yes. Instant, who was the actual custodian, in fact, of the record?
At that instant, under the rules of the
I'm not asking for a legal answer. I'm asking for a fact.
Certainly. Factually speaking, Ms. Bellamy had physical control of the audio files. However, as the clerk of the court and as the legally speaking, the custodian of the record, certainly Mr. Friend would have had the authority to ask Ms. Bellamy to turn those over to him.
At some point in time, did she in fact turn them over?
She did in July 2019, about 2 or so weeks before trial.
If I may, can I go back to something fundamental that has been raised by the opposing counsels, and that is the jurisdictional question on the petition for the writ? Is it verified, or was there an affidavit in motion for a writ, or how do you believe the initial jurisdictional threshold was met?
Well, first, I don't believe that the Public Records Act requires the same procedure as the writ under Chapter 25. It doesn't reference Chapter 25. Well, and the cases that,
The Public Records Act provides two paths, one via mandamus or one via the Attorney General. You didn't take the Attorney General path, did you?
Mr. Malone did write a letter to the Attorney General requesting assistance,
but
that's where he got the response.
Didn't pursue that.
He did not pursue that, right?
So you're under the mandamus path,
sure,
under the Public Records Act, and you don't think that the Public Records Act reference to mandamus takes you to Chapter 25, Article 21.
Well, all I can say is that the Public Records Act doesn't reference Article 21 of Chapter 25. But even if that does apply, in this situation, the district court took oral testimony sworn under oath, which in effect oral affidavits from not just Mr. Malone, but the two respondents.
So is that a waiver argument that you're making? That the requirement for a verified petition or a motion and affidavit was somehow waived
or effectively supplanted by the testimony of the
And how does that fit into the mandamus statute? From whence do you draw that proposition?
The mandamus statute talks about issuing a mandamus before there is any objections, basically ex parte. In this situation, the court basically moved on its own to have the trial and heard oral testimony. The purpose, as this court has said, of either the affidavit or the verification is to have somebody swear under oath that the facts are as they as is stated in the complaint. And here we have, you know, the sworn testimony of Mr. Malone as well as the two respondents as to the facts of this case.
What have we said about whether parties can waive jurisdiction of them?
I don't think I'm
assuming you're making a waiver argument.
More
the parties
of a
have waived
substitution
the requirements for mandamus, even if they wanted to.
I guess I don't have any response to that. Sorry. I will mention, even if the court does find that it has not been waived or has not been any kind of substitution or equivalent, that judicial economy would suggest that the court should nonetheless address the merits of the case, because if it's dismissed on a procedural ground, basically what's going to happen is a new request under the Public Records Act, another denial, another trial, and we'll be back here in a year. So moving back to the merits of the case, the Public Records Act defines a public record as any record, regardless of physical form. Certainly a audio recording would be satisfied under the public records. The respondents have raised certain issues about statutes that may or may not exempt that, but all of those statutes involve bills of exceptions, transcripts, evidence, exhibits. None of them deal with audio recordings, and none of them, even if they did preclude turning over or copies of the records, they don't preclude turning over copies of the audio recordings. And the Public Records Act says it has to be expressly provided in the statute for something not to be a public record or to be exempted from a public record. And if there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve, I have a little bit of time, I'd like to reserve for a reply, a rebuttal, if I can.
Thank you
very much. Mr. Campbell, good morning to you.
Morning. May it please the court, James Campbell on behalf of Appley former court reporter Megan Bellamy. I'd like to save the last 5 minutes for Mr. Wolf to address the case on behalf of the court clerk.
When you do that, you need to be aware that the timer won't help you here. You've got to figure out 5 minutes yourself.
Will do.
Thank you.
I'd like to quickly start by dismissing Mr. Malone's demand for the stenographer's notes because he never submitted a public records request for that. The first time he ever requested those notes was in the complaint he filed in this case. So without a valid public records request, there was no duty on behalf of any of the respondents to produce those. Now, moving to the jurisdictional question, which was raised during the first part of the argument, there is a requirement under 25-2160 that requires an affidavit under these circumstances, and case law recognizes that could alternatively be a verification. The Van Cleve case that we cite in our brief is pretty clear here that the district court never acquires jurisdiction if there isn't an affidavit in the first place. And so we think that the court never had jurisdiction.
Mr. Supernov's argument is the testimony given at some hearing was a substitute for the affidavit. Is that possible?
We don't believe it is. And when you look at the Van Cleve case, they actually did have an evidentiary hearing there. Now, they aren't specific. The court wasn't specific in the case whether the relator testified in that case, but there was an evidentiary hearing. And nevertheless, this court still found that the absence of the affidavit rendered the district court without jurisdiction. Also, there isn't a waiver issue here, whether there could be one or not, because if you look at our amended answer, which is in the transcript at specifically page 66, we expressly raise this issue of the absence of a verification or an affidavit. Moving now to the custodian issue, which I think is a very significant issue. At the end of the day, I think this court can dismiss this case because we don't have the proper custodian here. When you start with court rule 1-210, it identifies this recording as the property of the court. And it says that a court reporter no longer has control over it once she leaves state employment. By the time that Ms. Bellamy received the request from Mr. Malone, she was no longer a state employee, so she had no more control over this material. Now,
but in fact, she had physical control.
She did still have a copy of it. That is correct. But she didn't have, what I would argue, she didn't have legal control, because under that controlling rule, rule 1-210, she did not have that authority passed from her to the court. Now, then that raises the question, who is the proper custodian? And I think the proper custodian has to be the district court judge, because she is the only one that would have had authority to authorize the release of this recording. And here's why. Because if you look at court rule 6-1513, it specifically says that all court personnel, including court clerks and court reporters, shall not disclose without authorization of the court to any person any information relating to a pending case that is not part of the public records of the court. And we think that reference to public records there are what not what's a public record for purposes of the Public Records Act, but simply what's available for access if somebody were to walk into the court. So,
well, it's the court's record. Do we think the rules ever intended that the judge actually take control of the tapes or whatever there is here?
I think so. I think if you look at the rules and you see that what it says about court reporters, all they do is at the behest of the judge. They are appointed by the judge. They work at the judge's pleasure. So then the question is the court clerk the custodian? And he testified pretty clearly at the trial that he didn't view himself as having the authority to release these documents. And when he gets requests like this, he takes them to the district court judge, and ultimately it's his or her call whether to release them. So in light of that question of ultimate authority, we think that the best approach is to find that the custodian is not before this court. And the last point I'd like to make just really briefly before I turn it over to Mr. Wolf is, even if you think this is a close question on the merits, whether this recording qualifies as a public record under the public record statutes, I would encourage the court to consider the impact that it would have on essential judicial functions, specifically what this court said in the Viscerna versus Steele case, where it recognized that allowing public records requests to cut this deeply into internal confidential judicial records would create a significant problem. And what we have here is a recording that includes off-the-record confidential discussion between court, between the judge and court staff, between attorneys and co-counsel, and between attorneys and their clients.
Could that be redacted?
Functionally, we don't believe it could be, and here's why. Because Ms. Bellamy testified that her SD card on which this recording exists covers months and months, almost a year's worth of hearings. So you'd have to... I don't know how you could do that with electronically to not only redact all the way down to one hearing, but then to redact specifically portions of it out. So no, we don't think that
is there a difference between the kind of information in the Viscerna that was requested and the kind of information that was requested here?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There in Viscerna, it was the judicial branch education documents, which effectively consisted of things like presentations to the judiciary on substantive matters. But as the court recognized there, that didn't go to the heart of judicial considerations and deliberations. In contrast here, what we have are discussions between the judge and court staff. That goes right to the heart of judicial deliberations, and so we think it's different. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wolf, good morning to you. Good morning.
Good morning, Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Josh Wolf, and I represent the appellee, John Friend, Douglas County Clerk of the District Court. First and foremost, I'd like to take a moment to join in the arguments as presented by Mr. Campbell. We concur with his analysis and his argument regarding who is the proper custodian of the court and in whether or not those records could have been reasonably segregated out from the privileged discussions that they contain. My discussion today will very briefly focus on hopefully two things. One, that the audio recordings are not public records under the statute. And two, even if they are, they should be allowed to be permissively withheld under the public records statute. Nebraska Statute 84712.01 excludes from the definition of public record any information or record that any other statute expressly provides shall not be made public. Statute 24-1003 assigns to the Supreme Court the authority and duty to promulgate rules for the recording, preparing, and preservation of the court record. And Rule 1-210 makes it clear that the recordings that are sought here are the property of the trial court. That court also reflects that those recordings are used to make the record of the proceedings, not that they are the record of the proceedings.
You mentioned the reference to being the records of the trial court. When I look at 84-712.01 in subparagraph 1, the definition of public records is contained there. and it includes records of or belonging to the state, the county, the city, a village, a political subdivision, a tax district, an agency, a branch, a department, a board, a bureau, and some other things. It doesn't reference court specifically, but is court encompassed by that reference to branch?
Your Honor, I believe that the court would be encompassed by branch. I think that there are judicial records that would fall under the public record statutes. But I think that what's operative here is the very first sentence of that section, which says, except as expressly provided by other statute.
Statute and court rules you reference expressly provide that those are not public records, or does it do so by implication?
Your Honor, our argument would be that it expressly doesn't necessarily preclude by implication or by omission. It's a well-founded rule that meaning of a statute can be found by its omission of words as well as its inclusion of words, and that the inclusion of one thing can be the exclusion of all others. Here we have...
What does express mean?
I think, and we can dicker over the differences between express and explicit. I think that express means that they make it clear that the audio recordings are not meant to be released to the public. And I think that the Supreme Court, throughout multiple rules, has made it clear that the record of trial is the typewritten transcription and not the audio recording. And I think that that's because of the off-the-record conversations and privileged conversations that it contains that can't be reasonably segregated out from that audio recording.
The open record statutes attempt to make the records in specific court cases and the records that a court reporter keeps and that belong to the court according to our rules, if the open record statutes were interpreted to include those kinds of records, would there be a constitutional separation of powers issue?
Chief Justice, I see that I'm out of time. If I can have the court's indulgence to answer your question.
You certainly may.
I think that there could potentially be a separation of powers issues, but I think that that's been addressed by the United States Supreme Court in Nixon v. Warner Communications and by this court in State v. Cribbs, and again in Beskrona v. Steele, which is to say the right to inspect and copy judicial records is not absolute, and that every court should have supervisory power over its own records and files, and that this court and the United States Supreme Court have held that whether to release such records is best left to the sound discretion of the trial court. And the record in this case reflects that the trial court did exercise that discretion and has, in fact, since the decision in this case, exercised it again at CR 16, 2695, which is currently on appeal at A2460. And a motion under Court Rule 2-105 to amend the Bill of Exceptions and the pending motion by appellant for access to the audio recordings, a decision best left to the discretion of the trial court to whom the records belong.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 51 seconds.
51 seconds, Mr. Supernow.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to address a couple of issues, the custodian of the audio files is pretty clearly defined in the court rules as the clerk of the district court, because the clerk of the district court is the custodian of all of the district court's records. So the idea that the judge is somehow the custodian, whether the judge has to make the ultimate decision or not, the public record statute says to make the request to the custodian, which would be Mr. Friend. And to address also whether an implied exception can be express or implied, I believe it was in Beskrona that this court said that an informal rule cannot accept a record as a public record. So if the formal rule can't, then there can't be an implied exception either. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments in this case. Thank you, counsel, for participating and being here today. Please, as you exit today, please follow our coronavirus guidelines. That is, keep your mask on if at all possible and distance yourselves when you leave. And please leave by the side door here. Again, thank you. You are excused.